Do you know what's wild to me?
What?
In 5 years, the 1980s will have been 50 years ago.
I know, that's pretty foul, honestly.
That's crazy.
So foul.
When I grew up 50 years ago was the 40s.
Yeah, the 80s is crazy.
It's going to be 50 years ago.
It's diabolical.
Welcome to TikTok Theology, a podcast that tackles the major trending topics on social media that concern the Christian faith. I'm Megan.
And I'm Steven. We know you can't form a theology in 3 minutes or less, but those videos can identify current issues. TikTok will give us the prompt, and then we'll do a deep dive. Thanks for joining us in this exploration.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to our last episode of the season.
Last one.
And even as we were talking about this, this may be a two-parter depending on how much we want to yap about this topic, because let's be so honest here.
There's a lot.
Reading the signs of the end times is not a conversation that can be had in less than an hour, honestly, probably.
We're going to try.
I promise.
We'll give it a valiant effort.
We will give it a valiant effort, trust and believe. So, but that's going to be like what we're unpacking today is the concept of reading the signs of the end times. And I mean, this has been a conversation, honestly, since Jesus ascended.
Yeah.
Jesus rose and everyone was like, we're in the end times. Like, it's time to move because he's coming back. And that was with the disciples and the apostles were like, oh my goodness. And now here we are 2,000 years later. Still here.
Yep.
Which is cool for us.
Yep. It's called the delayed eschaton, by the way.
For all you academic friends.
Theo nerds,
in fact. So, I mean, honestly, when it comes to Christian social media, I think you'd be hard pressed to not find someone trying in some way, shape, or form to give their perspective on the end times.
Yeah.
I've seen so many people, if they call themselves any form of like a Christian influencer or something like that, they have tried at one point to add to the topic of the end times.
Yeah.
Especially, I remember during most political seasons, honestly, but especially during like the 2020 election, there were people coming out of the woodwork with these prophecies about presidencies and who would be the president and what would happen. And
who's the Antichrist?
So there's been so much all the time, always, especially recently on social media, when you can start to hear people calling themselves a prophet and then seeing the false prophecies like in front of your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little different now than it was. Like, I'm sure there've been false prophecies for like forever. Right.
Yeah.
But now we're seeing them at very large, massive scales, and it can be really dangerous to spread that, especially when you have any kind of following. And that's how we can create really conspiratorial Christians and people who are really trying to read into scripture into apocalyptic literature that we see in Revelation or in Matthew or in Ezekiel, whatever. And we're trying to read into it what we're experiencing now.
Which also makes you think, is that itself a sign of the end times? The fact that there's widespread deception, misinformation.
Oh,
because Matthew seems to talk about that, the book of Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's pertinent, but...
But I mean, in literally 5 years ago now was COVID.
Yeah.
And in so many ways that had people immediately like... The disease is spreading, like, it's a sign of the times, like, this is it.
I did a whole series of paintings about the apocalypse, just because I was like, yo, this is apocalyptic.
This has been a really big conversation, especially for the last 5 years, when we were like, what is happening to the state of the world 5 years ago, when we were shutting down, and things were locking up, and we were like, what is going on? Like, this is more than, like, this was something that people hadn't seen in their lifetime yet.
No.
Of like this kind of like widespread worldwide lockdown. And even like when we talk about the end times and stuff, we do have to take into consideration what has been the theme of this season, which is impact globally.
Yeah.
It's very easy, especially for us in the American church, to kind of base end times, signs of the times stuff based on what happens for us
here
in the United States. And I've heard a lot of people talk about that and say, well, America, and trying to insert actually America into Revelation, or finding places where we fit as if we are the center of the globe and everything revolves around us. And so I think that this is why it's really important to have these conversations of how accurately and intentionally read the signs of the end times in a way that I think honors the way it was written, honors what the Lord was saying through John or through Matthew, and that actually helps Christians out and doesn't just...
Pays attention to the whole church, too.
Yeah, and doesn't actually create a more isolated issue.
Yeah, but just to piggyback on that point, when it's global... our issues, we highlight and we can only see it in tunnel vision. Like,
right.
Like, oh, what's happening for us is like definitely this is the end because blah, 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 blah. But like
yeah.
other cultures are having these detrimental things happening to them mm-hmm. all throughout history. Like there's been different times and—
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
so it's going to be difficult to distinguish which is the one.
Yeah. Or we're struggling, but other countries are thriving.
Yeah.
And are like uh-huh. doing really well. Or like the Christian communities are exploding and people are coming to the Lord in droves, but because yeah. we're having a tough political season.
Yeah.
We've decided that means the end is near.
Right.
Well, because we're not right. acknowledging what's happening in other countries around the world.
Yeah. When things are good economically for us, we're just like, oh all right, cool. yeah, it's all good. You know, Jesus will come back at some point, blah, blah, blah. And then we don't pay attention to the, you know, Christians that are being persecuted and maybe like underground churches in China, for example, where they're expecting Jesus to return right away because they're suffering, they're being persecuted.
Right.
And then vice versa. So, I mean, that's crazy. But you also brought up COVID. Like, man, like if we look back at 2020, 5 years ago, so it's about a 5-year anniversary, which is crazy.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That feels old.
Yeah. The world shut down. We fought over toilet paper. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
We could all not be found. I was like, oh, okay.
We had to wear masks to try to figure out this epidemic all over the place. And mm-hmm. we didn't know the extent of things. People were dying, certain things. We just didn't know what was happening. It definitely yeah. seemed apocalyptic.
Yeah,
I remember.
It did.
Do you remember there was a lot of fires in California too at the same time?
In Australia that year too.
Yeah. But like, I remember one time.
There was so much going on.
Do you recall straight up going outside and the sky being straight up orange?
Yeah, I do.
Man, it looked like Blade Runner.
Oh, it looked real creepy a couple of times during
like
that year.
Dune.
I was like, huh.
It looked like Dune or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I was like, man, I, you know, you can be like, oh yeah, I'm biblically mature and I'm not going to read it too much into stuff and blah, blah, blah.
But then you walk out and you're like,
you're like, oh my gosh, Jesus is returning right
yeah,
now.
I can't believe he's on the way. I mean? Oh, everyone yeah. call their parents because yeah. we're going home, baby.
Like that junk is orange. It's not supposed to be orange.
No, no, quite literally.
That was crazy.
There was a lot going on that year.
There was race riots, Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. There was, you know, with George Floyd.
That was a really tough year.
It was a tough year.
It was a bad year.
Mm-hmm. And we had a crazy political season.
Oh yeah, in the US we did. It was crazy.
In 2020.
Yeah.
And we just had another one. So that's like kind of harkening back there. And people actually even like prolonged their prophecies. Remember some people were like they're prophesying 2020 that like, oh well, Trump will be president at the end of this. And then when it didn't happen, they were like
actually the election will be overturned in March or something.
Yeah, they said that. But then now they're like coming back, same people coming back and being like, oh, see, that prophecy was true.
Just
it was
years
just meant
later,
for 2024.
Yeah, no.
So now he has house and he has the this blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, man, you guys are just.
You know, guys, if we were in biblical times and we were tossing false prophets out like that, you know what would happen?
They'd be tossed
They'd
out.
They'd be stoned.
Some Pharisees would come up and say, you have abolished the law and the prophets.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like they're reading things so crazy.
Yeah. I think we've lost our respect for prophecy a little bit.
Yeah. Because
we use
of that.
It as a way to advance what we want.
Yeah. And,
or political agendas,
stuff,
yeah.
agendas, you know? So I hearken you back to, what is real biblical prophecy, an episode mm-hmm. we did
yeah.
Last
go
season.
Go listen to that.
Yeah. Go check that out.
That helps.
you might find it helpful
yeah.
or two seasons ago rather. But I mean, there's other things that have been done that are egregious. For example, people can look into the book of Revelation and then see the locusts and be like, oh, well, see, he's clearly reading that's a helicopter. Like, that's what he's seeing. John is having a vision of the future and he doesn't know how to describe a helicopter. And so he describes it as the locust with all this kind of stuff and blah, blah, blah. So I've heard that so many times. And I just got to say, like, that is for sure 100% wrong.
Yeah.
And so why can I say that so forcefully?
Right.
Because literally nothing in the Bible ever.
They would not have jumped 2,000 years in advanced technology and he would have seen a helicopter.
There's nothing like that in the Bible.
No.
They're acting like...
There weren't even machines in the same way.
Like, right. But they're acting like he like was looking through a crystal ball and just saw
yeah,
the future
no.
like on a screen or something like that
no.
and just describe what it was.
No.
Like the imagery in the book of Revelation is so densely biblical.
Yeah.
And it actually like talks about so many other aspects of the Old Testament
mm-hmm.
that are bringing back and yeah. talking about certain things.
And apocalyptic literature being within the context of which it was written. So
yeah.
instead of us trying to put our 2024 viewpoint on what John was seeing in Revelation, like it does us better to go back
and to look at what
and to look at what was happening at that time to
exactly.
see what he would have been shown.
Yeah. So I want to do that. And so that's why I'm not sure we'll start, and I'm not sure if this is going to go a little long. We'll split it up into two because I think it's such an important conversation.
Yeah.
But I do this for a class I teach at LPU. We go through the entire book of Revelation in outline, mm-hmm. just like what does it actually even say?
Right.
Because so many Christians don't even like
they haven't even read it because it's a little scary.
It's hard to understand, to be fair. There's a lot of biblical illiteracy, but even those ones that are biblically literate, it's hard to even approach.
It's a lot when you start getting into all of the Leviathans and the things that are coming out of the deep and the things that are burning and the things that have got a couple heads on them. Things that got multiple wings. You're like, oh, never mind.
Yeah.
I don't want to read
this. I'm going to go ahead and put that away.
And then I think sometimes about what it was like to be John, mm-hmm. to see all that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, that would have taken me out. I'd be like, Lord,
well,
you could take me home. I've seen enough.
Well, I think we should talk about them because the images definitely mean things.
Oh, for sure.
And they're not as crazy as people think.
No.
And I want to go through it and talk through that with our audience, with our TikTok theologians, and hopefully it will be seen as helpful. But before we do that, I think we should talk about what are some of the signs that people look for. What are the things that they actually
look for? Let's lay some groundwork here before we start jumping in.
So first, you got to ask, what is apocalyptic literature? Because the book of Revelation is apocalyptic literature. Now, like apocalypses are brand new to the Bible. Like the Bible invented them essentially. The first apocalypses were Jewish apocalyptic. You could say it's like in Daniel and then also in the Apocrypha.
Yeah.
It's Jewish apocalyptic. So Revelation is kind of like this big, huge, full-blown Christian apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
But there's little mini Christian apocalypses written in other places too, like in Matthew.
Revelation is not the only place that has apocalyptic literature.
Right. But it's the full-blown Christian apocalypse that we use that's in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, I actually love the book. I think it's one of the absolute favorite books to teach out of. I think it's so powerful in so many ways.
Yeah.
But I do think it's difficult to understand, so you need some guidance for it.
Yeah, for sure.
So one thing about the genre of apocalypse, it is a genre of divine revelation, usually given through some sort of heavenly intermediary, like an angel or something.
Right.
Like the angel of God comes to you and tells you stuff. This is from Jesus, like that kind of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And God promises to intervene in human history. Why? Because the reason why apocalypses were written was because some kind of persecution was going on in the world.
Hmm.
And so apocalypses were written to offer hope to people who were being persecuted.
Right.
The book of Revelation was written during a time after the temple was destroyed and the Christians were being persecuted by Rome.
Rome, yeah.
God promises to overthrow an evil empire, and God also promises to establish his kingdom.
Yep.
So in the Old Testament, Ezekiel, Daniel, Zechariah, and Revelation in the New Testament, and like 1st Enoch, 4th Ezra are some apocryphal ones. And so it uses this like crazy amount of imagery.
Yeah.
It's usually fantastic. You know what I'm saying? like crazy fantastical imagery.
Yeah.
There's a ton of symbolism. And so this is the big problem is like the symbolism, what I'm going to say, and I want to reiterate over and over and over again, is that it is very richly interbiblical. Like it is referencing other parts of the Bible, like all throughout the whole book of Revelation and these other apocalypses.
Right.
It is not random. Oh, this symbol means a helicopter. This symbol means this, like a computer chip that you put in your forehead. Like that kind of stuff. Like that junk
or
is
the Monster Energy drink or whatever.
Yeah, that junk is crazy. That's where it gets conspiratorial. Like the Bible just never, ever, ever was written like that.
Yeah.
It never means any of that stuff.
Right.
You can't like from Genesis to Revelation, nothing is like that in the Bible.
No.
And you can't just start all of a sudden in the last book and start reading it like that. That's crazy. it just doesn't work that way. And when you see the symbols and you see like, oh, that makes a ton of sense. Like, oh, it's this. And then you start seeing it. So we're going to talk about that.
Right.
And also it has a use of history. So the when of history is very difficult to determine.
Right.
So some people are like, oh, did this all happen in the first century? Or is this all going to happen? The truth of the matter is, I would say, what I definitely say, and I think a lot of scholars agree, it's a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this did happen in the first century, and some of it will happen later. And then when we go through the book of Revelation, we can determine that. Towards the end, that talks about the future things that were still going to occur.
Yeah.
But then it also sets up a concept of the kingdom of God being already present. Jesus established it. The church is supposed to keep it going and show everybody the good news of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not consummated. It's not fully blown. It's not completed.
Right.
One of the images that they use throughout the whole Bible is this image of marriage. And so, mm-hmm. you know, when you're married in a ceremony, you're married, like you're legally married,
right?
But you're not consummating the wedding until the marriage night,
right?
Okay, so that's obviously sexual imagery, but that is what it is. That's when you become one flesh.
Yeah.
But that time between when you're married and your consummation, you're already in the promise. You're married.
Right.
That's the same kind of imagery that's being used literally for the Bible. Like you have the marriage supper of the Lamb. You have the return for Christ. The church is the bride waiting for the bridegroom. Mm-hmm. Like that's the same imagery. So it's like we're married to Jesus, the church is. You can think of it that way.
Right.
But the consummation hasn't happened. Again, we have to like not get our mind in the gutter and see like, oh, it's sexual imagery, blah, blah, blah. Like understand what this image is saying, that there is this fruition to come of the kingdom of God
right.
that happens when Christ returns the second time.
Right.
If y'all are uncomfortable with that kind of concept or that kind of thinking, you're uncomfortable with the Bible, y'all. That's what the Bible says. One of the main chapters that talks about in the Bible that talks about the signs is Matthew 24. And Matthew 24, it begins when he foretells the destruction of the temple.
Right.
And so, you know, it starts like this. Jesus left the temple and was going away when his disciples came to point out to him that the buildings of the temple. But he answered them, "You see all these, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down." And so he is predicting the temple being overthrown, which it did get overthrown. Then you have the signs of the end of the age. And he says, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, telling us, by the way, so it's like, if you're like at Gethsemane and Mount of Olives, like you can see the temple. Like if you've ever been to Israel, like it's like super small, which is crazy. I totally recommend anybody going to Israel. Like everything is so close to each other.
You're like, oh, hey.
The Sea of Galilee is a lake. It's a big lake.
A lake of Galilee.
Like it's legitimately a lake. Like from one side, you can like see these major cities, but you can point and be like, oh, look, there's Tiberias. And they're not like major cities. I mean, but like these historical sites, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, it's just crazy how close everything is. Like,
yeah.
So like Jesus literally.
Because you're thinking about it in the concept of like big city in the US.
Yeah. It's not like that.
It's
no.
It's much. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
No.
So much smaller. And so, but like straight up, like Jesus is sweating blood in the Garden of Gethsemane. He could literally look over and peer and see the temple, like visually see the temple. Like it's like a like football field away. Like it's not far. Like, so it's crazy. A little sidebar.
Some side note.
Yeah. And he says, and Jesus answered them, "See that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ, and they will lead many astray. And you will hear the wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet." So like it keeps going and it talks about this, an abomination of desolation is verse 15. And it also says spoken of by the prophet Daniel. Like he's literally making those biblical connections. And then he says the coming of the Son of Man. Like there's a really, really important point here that says, "But concerning the day and the hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. For as were the days of Noah, so will the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving to marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark, and they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two men will be in the field, one will be taken and one left. Two women will be gardening at the mill, one will be taken and one left. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect." There's a few things that are talking about, like throughout this whole passage, and if I read the whole thing, it would take a little while, but
yeah.
There's widespread deception. You know, people claiming to be Christ and like in just falsities. So we think right. about today, like, oh, that's like our misinformation age. Yeah, I mean, it could. I mean, it's not sure. like that's wrong. Like, that's definitely a thing. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, people have been counterfeiting Christ from mm-hmm. the moment Christ was
no,
here.
No, totally. Like, and so this is kind of like yeah. the first century-ness of the passage.
Mm-hmm.
But then also it's like, you think, turn back and think, be like, but yeah, now we have the internet. And like
yeah.
this widespread misinformation mm-hmm. is like
yeah.
global.
And misinformation's like, been spread always, but now it's just easier to do it.
Yeah, really easy to do it. With AI, with the internet, like stuff, sure. it's just like, oh my goodness. Like
yeah.
that's crazy. And so there is this widespread deception. Wars and rumors of wars, like we're in some wars now and like we see them all over the world. Mm-hmm. There's always a threat of World War III ever since World War III. World War One and Two, you know, like now we always have this threat of like, this is going to come. So that's what brings anxiety to people too.
Always. Yeah.
There's natural disasters that talks about, and
for sure.
we had, you know, like We've the tsunami, always, yeah. earthquakes, major fires,
hurricanes,
tornadoes, floods, like, all these. Right. And so anytime any of that happens, that always brings anxiety to people, like, oh, is this a sign?
Yeah.
There's lawlessness. And so people get really worried to think of like, oh, this is the most lawless time in history and this and that. Mm-hmm. But I want us to just like take a moment and think like, is our era lawless? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But do realize that in the first century, people were regularly strung up and killed for all people, women and children, to see them die slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Beaten and dying slowly in the public. If you actually look at like some Roman lore and stuff like that, and their cults that they would do, their kind of like Dionysian cults and stuff like that, they would do things that were like orgies as like spiritual things, and there was sexual deviances that were like way beyond what you even see today.
Correct.
In certain things. And that's in Jesus's day.
Yes.
And I don't think people realize that was 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, we're not progressing to be so much worse. We've always been bad.
We've always been bad.
There's certain things we're way worse at now.
Yeah.
And there's things that we're better at. But like every era on this side of the eschaton
has had that.
Has had that. Mm-hmm. They're always bad.
Yeah.
And so like, don't forget that. Like, we talked about this before, but like when we talk about the good old days in America and stuff like that, it literally doesn't even make sense.
No, because they suck.
Yeah. Like not too long ago in our grandparents' lifetime, black men and women and white men and women couldn't drink from the same water fountain.
Right.
Like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. Like, what are the good old days here? You know what I'm saying? Like, it all is very, very, very perspectival. Maybe good for you, but not good for other people.
Correct.
And then also, like, are the good old days happening currently all over the world? I don't think so. There's a whole bunch of Christians being persecuted right now.
Right.
There's refugees that see no way to have life, to have anything positive. There's people fleeing corrupt governments, people who are getting killed, family members getting killed, raped, and all sorts of stuff happening today, right now.
Correct.
So when was this lawlessness less lawless and more lawless?
Correct.
Like, this is something that's a very difficult one for me, because I think whenever people try to talk about like, oh, let's go retreat back to this era, or we're going to progress, and or like it's getting so bad and stuff like that, it's like, yo, I think you need to be a student of history.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we've not seen, right now, we're not seeing anything like the Nazi Holocaust.
Correct.
We're not seeing anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of persecution, but that was a systematic genocide with concentration camps.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might say there's genocides happening in our war right now.
Right.
It's not the same. Those are different.
Not to the same extent.
But it's also not the same. There's not concentration camps going on. Like, I mean, there's atrocities always.
Yeah.
So we don't want to compare people's problems and the issues that are there.
Mm.
But the point that I am making is that it's always been bad.
Yeah. Correct.
You know, and so like, we've fallen. So anyways, I want to make that point. But there's persecution of Christians. This is happening today all over the world, not in the U.S. We're not persecuted. Y'all don't even act like y'all are persecuted.
You're
my gosh.
Blessings.
And so the gospel is preached worldwide. And I think when we start thinking about the internet age and stuff like that,
this is
something that's there. And then the rebuilding temple in Jerusalem. So this is part of the reason why Israel becoming a state again, like its own sovereign state again, was a big deal in 1949, because they saw this as a fulfillment, or like the beginning stages of this prophecy being fulfilled, and this temple being rebuilt. Right now, currently, there's a mosque that's upon the temple. Mm-hmm. So like, start talking about Israeli and Muslim, you know, conflict.
Yeah.
This is a major thing. And then Christians are involved, because we see our own prophecy as being like, well, the temple must be restored for this to come back.
Right.
That's the kind of complexity there. Like we even mentioned, you know, the Son, Jesus himself, doesn't even know the day or the hour.
Right.
So what about Jesus' reference that the generation would not pass away before these events even take place? So that's kind of wild, right?
Right.
Because we're 2,000 years later.
Right. The generation is very much to pass away.
Yeah. So, but given 2436, a lot of theologians read this in relation to the full coming of the Son of Man. And so they see this as a fulfillment without the consummation elements in Jesus' prophecy. So like the
generation did not pass away without having a connection to the kingdom.
The king, yeah, exactly. They, mm-hmm. they established the kingdom and they yep. began it. But like, is it consummated? No. That's how most theologians actually, I think, read that.
Yeah.
So the generation alive at this time saw these things of the temple's destruction come true. I mean, they literally watched it, right?
Yeah.
In the first century.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But this wasn't meant to refer to the coming of the Son of Man, which they thought it was. Paul did, and like everybody thought yeah. it was. Paul, in his letters, seemed to have thought that. But then the destruction of the temple came after that. But either way, we need to look at it already, not yet, in both hand.
Yeah.
Okay? So first off, when we look at that and the signs and stuff, do you see like, okay, I see why you guys are having these anxieties.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
But I think like, yeah, I think everything in perspective, but mm-hmm. it's like, if you're looking at all these things and being like, oh no, if you're looking at these things as a checklist.
Yeah.
More so than anything else. And you're like, oh no, check, 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 mm-hmm. check, check. Like here are all the things that are happening in this world. Does that now mean that the countdown's on and yeah. that something's going to happen? Like, whatever, whatever. And so I think that if you are kind of viewing Revelation as a checklist, or you're looking at Matthew as a checklist to what will come in Revelation, I think you're going to get anxious.
Yeah. And it's also like, are you outsmarting Jesus there? Because he's, right. he doesn't know when he's coming back. Right.
And I think that does bring about the, when we don't fully have control over something, or if we can't fully understand something, or we can't fully know when something's happening, the part of us that eases anxiety is trying to take back control.
Yeah.
And so it feels like better to try and guesstimate when Jesus might come back mm-hmm. based on these things, because that feels like it gives us a false sense of control
yeah.
over knowing when he's going to come back, so that we can prepare, or we yeah. can settle yeah, all totally. That we need to settle.
Yeah. It's during our anxieties.
Correct. And I think that, I mean, so much, even when I was a student at LPU, like things that I learned in like the first, my freshman year, in like classes like ancient civ and stuff, like ancient civilization, is like being content with an element of mystery and of not knowing. That is really, really not what the West is about.
For sure.
Like us in the West, we love to have answers to things. We love exacts. Like we love to, like, it's really hard for us to sit in
the dissonance of,
yeah. And like unanswerables or not sures or stuff like that.
But Jews, that's part of,
that was part of the thing. Yeah, like
it still is.
And still is. Yeah. Like a lot of that culture and a lot of, and I think it's why a lot of scripture is like that. And it's yeah. hard for us, but
wisdom
for them, that's
like
very
that.
Normal. Like, mm-hmm. So I think this kind of space is like when we have to challenge ourselves to sit in the mystery that was left for us
yep.
and just like genuinely take a breath and rest in the knowledge that like when Jesus returns, mm-hmm. it's when it's supposed to happen.
And we have a very clear call.
Yeah.
Be ready.
Be ready. And so it's our job to be ready ourselves, to do the work to bring people to the kingdom now. It's not our job to sit there and try and do a countdown
yeah.
and figure out and guess when he's going to come back so that we can all feel better about it. This is just essentially a cosmic call to go and spread the gospel to all nations.
Yeah, because I mean, like not just like, yeah, like you're probably wrong. Like the Bible says you're definitely wrong.
We don't know.
If you think you know when Jesus is going to return.
You're 100% wrong.
Like it says you are wrong. Mm-hmm. Like it says Jesus doesn't know himself. Like you're not outsmarting Jesus here.
No.
So like, yeah.
You haven't picked up on something that the Son of God didn't.
Yeah. So exactly.
I promise.
So the YouTube podcaster chilling in his parents' basement making yeah. these end time prophecies and being like, I figured out one. Like, nope, he's wrong. He is
100%.
Wrong. You
yeah.
can feel confident
like
about
we
that.
Can know that if the Son of Man doesn't know, then I promise that God is not going to reveal to you the time that it's going to come.
That is for sure. Well, I think that sets up it pretty well. And I think let's talk about some of these ideas, these images in the book of Revelation.
Okay.
It's going to be interesting. This is always like a favorite part in people's class and when I teach in Theo 3.
There you go.
So, but I am feeling that this is going to be a two-parter, this thing. So let's go ahead and start.
Okay.
All right. So when you open the book of Revelation, you crack it open, you notice that it's actually also a letter.
As everything is, yeah. I feel.
And so, but it's a little different. So the book, it starts with this prologue. And in chapter 1, you have the book's own introduction of itself. and you have this vision. It's a vision of Christ. And so you have this epic Christ with white hair, eyes of fire, feet like bronze, voice was a roar. The feet like bronze makes me think that he, like, you know, is tan and looks Puerto Rican.
Yeah, you're like, that's how I'm choosing to interpret.
You know, just my little eisegesis I'm gonna throw in there. You know what I'm saying?
There you go.
Just kidding. That was a joke, y'all.
So that was a joke. Do not come for me.
Yeah, go listen back to our profiling Christ episode that we did with Chris, and you'll see how wrong that was. Anyways, so he summons John to write down the visions that he saw, and so you then have, starting from chapter 2 through 3, you have all these little greetings to the seven various churches. Now, these are seven literal churches in Asia Minor that this letter was traveling to. So the book of Revelation was like going in a scroll to all of these churches. So it would start in Ephesus, then Smyrna, then Pergamum, then Thyatira, and it would be read there. Mm-hmm. And what was so interesting is, like, when it's being read, like, John is talking some mad smack to Rome, like, big time in his letter, mm-hmm. but he's using the symbolism that, like, if a Roman read it, they wouldn't necessarily know
that the smack is being talked, per se.
They wouldn't even know how bad they're being slapped around, which is dope. I love that.
That's just funny. That concept. That's baller. Anyway.
So it's going there. And so right off the bat, there's a weird interpretation where some people are like, well, see, each of these churches
represents, you know, a country or something.
A country or an era. Yeah. So there was this, and we're in the area of Philadelphia, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay. So this is like when people are like, do you read the Bible literally? Like, this is something where you're like reading it literally and they're making it unliteral.
Yeah, this letter was written to these actual genuine churches, and then they were sent to these churches.
Each one of them. And woo-hoo, each of them has a greeting, and the greeting...
Interpretation complete.
Exactly. And the greeting is either like commending them or slapping them around, mm-hmm. but it wasn't condemning them to hell.
Yeah.
Because correct. These were churches. So they were like, hey, get your act together.
Yeah.
Like, some of them got that. You know what I'm saying? But
which we know over the New Testament and the letters sent, several churches got...
They got slapped around.
Pull it around. Pull it back, girl.
But it doesn't mean they weren't like part of the church anymore.
Correct.
It was pastoral, you know, like...
Right. Paul was not writing letters to be like, you're no longer a part of the
exactly.
church. Because you suck.
Get it together, Corinth.
Yeah, right.
Church of Corinth, right?
Lock in.
But this is the same thing that's happening here. And so the letters are going to first Ephesus, then Smyrna, then Pergamum, then Thyatira, Sardis, and then Philadelphia and Laodicea. So I want to make a mention about Philadelphia, the sixth one. And in chapter 3, verse 10, it says this, because you have kept my word about patient endurance, I will keep you from the hour of trial that is coming on the whole world to try those that dwell on earth. I am coming soon. Hold fast that you have so that no one may seize your crown. Some people interpret that as like a rapture. Like, so because like, I'm going to hold you from the trials that are coming. But if you look at it contextually, like, they're literally being persecuted like by Rome in that moment. And so it could have been just as simple as Philadelphia is a city that wasn't very persecuted in the empire at that time. And then finally, Laodicea. So this is an interesting one. This is Revelation 3, verse 15. You probably heard this. I know your works. You are neither cold nor hot. Would that you were either cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spit you out of my mouth. Some of them you say like vomit you out of my mouth. So some people, like, we've preached like a million times, I've heard people preaching that like lukewarm Christians discuss Jesus. Like,
correct.
You have to be on fire or not, right?
Yeah.
Like that kind of a deal. That's not a bad message. That being lukewarm is bad,
mm-hmm.
but that's also not what this passage is saying.
Right.
Have you heard this before?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So basically he wants you to be either cold or hot. Like when we talk about lukewarmness, it's like cold is bad. Being hot and on fire for Christ is good. Lukewarm is backsliding. That's not actually what it's saying.
Right.
Cold is good. Hot is good. Lukewarm is bad.
Yeah.
In the middle is bad.
Yeah. Of which lukewarm water is bad.
It is.
It's awful. One time I did drink lukewarm water and I spit it out and I was like, huh, this is so meta. This is such a biblical moment for me.
How are you in England? Like,
I was
everything.
Like, wow. It's like tepid. You're like,
in Europe, they'd be drinking lukewarm.
Rank.
Everything.
Like room temp. I'm like,
you don't like it?
No.
We like things icy in America.
I like my ice. Yeah, I do.
Or hot.
Yeah.
You could think about it as like, that's a great thing, is like lukewarm coffee. It's like
rank.
The worst. Like,
it's awful.
But make it iced.
They're great.
Or make it hot.
Hot? You know, great. I mean? Yeah. Hot water with like tea or like hot chocolate or something. Awesome.
Yeah.
Iced coffee? Awesome.
But to take it even further,
room
this image.
Oh.
Yeah, I know, it's gross. But to take it even further.
Mm-hmm.
So when the water would come up from the springs, it was hot. And people thought that this water was medicinal, like it would heal you.
Yeah.
So people would go to it in this hot water and they would like go and like bathe in it and stuff, sit in it, so that way they could be healed
like
from whatever ailments. Yeah, like a coos nizzle. Yeah,
there you go.
That's what I call it. But anyways, my friend called it that when I was like 14, and I've called it ever since.
Wow. Yeah. I hope he knows the impact he had on you.
I don't know. Anyways, then... like let's say it's traveling from this spring down a stream. And so as it's going, it cools down. Well, once it leads somewhere and it's cold water, it becomes drinkable, potable. You can drink it.
Yep.
But if it is lukewarm, if it's on its way from the spring and it is still not hot or cold, it literally makes you sick if you drink it and you vomit. So that's actually a literal image of what would happen.
Thing, yeah.
If somebody drank lukewarm water, mm-hmm. is they would spit it out of their mouth or they would vomit.
Yeah. It is interesting because if you think about it, like when you're hurt, you have like, you get like recommended like, oh, put a hot compress or like a cold compress. Yep. Yeah. Like mm-hmm. both are good, but like some things need an ice pack and some things need like a heating pad or whatever. Yep. But no one's ever going to tell you to put like room temperature towels on your injury.
Nope. Just put this cloth on you.
Put this cloth on you and walk away.
Yeah. And so, but the point is here, Laodicea is not condemned to be evil, like just to hell, like this is terrible, or this is an era that's condemned or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a church that was neither hot nor cold, mm-hmm. stuck in the middle, and they were not like making their decision what they wanted to do. And God wanted them to be, you know, fervently on fire. This is what John wanted them to do, right? So,
right.
So that's just a little sidebar. That's where it goes there. Then starting in Revelation 4, we start seeing scenes in heaven. So it describes the vision and the vision in heaven. And so the first thing is there's 24 elders and 24 thrones. Mm-hmm. Do you know what that stands for?
24, just 24?
Yeah, the 24 elders?
No.
Okay, so some people have guessed lots of wild things.
Oh, I'm sure.
But there's a very obvious thing that this could mean. It probably represents, this is what most scholars believe. And by the way, I'm referencing a lot of the symbols of what I'm taking from. It's N.T. Wright's Revelation for Everyone. We'll put it in our show notes.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I highly recommend it. It's very, very readable. You can use it for churches and stuff like that. It's super good. But it probably represents the 12 tribes of Israel and the 12 disciples. That's the 24 elders.
Woo!
Which, I know. It's like it becomes so obvious when you actually read it.
Yes.
Or when you actually hear it. But that tends to represent both the old covenant, the
and
12
the
tribes,
covenant.
And the new covenant, the 12 disciples. So you see so much old and new covenant stuff happening in the book of Revelation.
Which that makes so much sense.
Yeah. You're talking about the end, everything being consummated,
you're
everything fulfilled.
All of it's coming back.
All of it's coming back.
There you go.
Then you have the four living creatures that are there worshiping God. You have the lion, the ox, the creature with the face of a man, and the eagle. Now, this one's a little harder to do, and I could like poke and prod, but a lot of people would think that these are all like lords of something. Like the lion is the lord of the animal, the ox is the lord of work, the man has dominion over nature, so he's the lord over nature.
Yeah.
And then the eagle has dominion over the sky, he's lord of the sky. So it basically represents all of creation.
All aspects of creation.
Bowing down to worship Christ.
That's, is this the same look, the same like four faced creatures that Ezekiel sees?
Yes, those are the same ones that Ezekiel sees.
Look at that. Biblical consistency.
And you're going to see this the entire time, right? Like the
they
entire
all echo
time.
Each other because it's all what? Intra-biblical.
That's right. That's right. And so, so you see right now you're seeing the old and the new covenant bowing down to Christ, and you see all of creation bowing down to Christ. And then you see this sealed little scroll, and you know what it is? It's like a scroll. So think about like the, you know, back in the day when a king would have something and he would like this seal, and it would be like this little like, red seal thingy that's stamped with their like crescent thingy or whatever.
Yeah, so you know it's from them.
It's from them. Mm-hmm. And then they would go like, hear ye, here's a letter. And they would pop the seal open and then they open the scroll and they read. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's the image, okay? That's what's going on. And so you got this scroll and the thing is it has seven little seals on it and no one in heaven could open it. And then they were like crying and they're like, oh my gosh, no one can open this. This is a sealed scroll. And this scroll like tells us the content of like how everything's going to end and we can't open it. We're freaking out. Oh my gosh. But then there was one that could open it. And then they saw and they heard a lion. I love this passage so much. Oh my gosh. This is Revelation 5 through 7.
Excuse me, I'm going to cry.
It's one of the most powerful things in the whole Bible, I think. They heard the lion and then they turned and they saw a slaughtered lamb. That is a subversion of power.
Right.
Jesus, the lion, came in the form of a slaughtered lamb.
Right.
Salvation came through his sacrifice,
right,
and not through his dominion,
right,
and power, right? Oh, it's so good.
He said, oh.
So good. But then you have, so the way the lamb is, Jesus here, who everybody's worshiping.
Praise God.
He's the one who can open the scroll. He's the only one who's worthy. That's the thing.
Right.
And it also, it says he's slain. So like he's saying his throat being slain. And he has seven horns and he has seven eyes. What does that mean? The seven horns and seven eyes. So seven is a number of perfection. Numbers mean different things symbolically.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows like seven is perfection or completion.
Right.
So when he has seven horns and seven eyes, horns typically refer to power. So even think about like the Dodge Ram, like the horns, and be like,
yeah,
Ram tough. You know what I'm saying? Like power.
Yes.
And then eyes usually talk about knowledge, seeing,
mm-hmm,
right? So if he has seven horns, seven eyes, that means he's all powerful.
All knowing and
all know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Omniscient and omnipotent.
Right.
Come on. It's not that hard.
Hey, it's why it's important to know, like, if why you can't read into stuff, because it's like you have to know numerology the way they would have understood.
Exactly.
Numerology.
Exactly. And some of it is still consistent today. We
oh,
still
for
think of
sure.
Seven
but if that's not how you think,
mm-hmm,
then you're going to be like, oh, what does the seven mean? Does it represent the seven of the... Nope.
Yep.
No, it's okay. Just look back at what symbolism means and numerology means,
mm-hmm,
when it was written.
That's right.
Perhaps.
Then you have a series of songs that happen, and this is like everybody's worshiping. So first, all the creatures and elders worship. This is Revelation 5, 8 through 10. Then the song of the angels in Revelation 5, 11 through 12, led by Carrie Job. She goes up there and leads. This is where we get Revelation song. It's those lyrics. Those are the lyrics for Revelation song, by the way. Carrie Job's up there. You know what I mean? She's like, all right, y'all ready? And then she just does it. So anyways, then you have the song of the universe. So all the creatures, the angels in the universe, everybody is worshiping and singing songs to Jesus, okay? And then he's opening it, and then guess what happens? The next thing, it shifts in Revelation,
mm-hmm,
and says, now we're going to open the seals. And then each seal that opens, something prep-ish happens. So you open one seal, open. And something crazy happens. Another seal, open, pop it open, and just keep going. And then, so you haven't opened the scroll yet. You're opening each seal.
Yeah.
And each seal that opens, and there's seven of them, something crazy happens. And this is when everything is like, starts beginning to usher in the end.
Yeah.
But it's all prep work. So the first seal, the white horse of earthly conquest and dominion is released.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is like the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Right.
Then the second seal, the red horse of war, slaughter and bloodshed. And then the third, the black horse of famine, commerce and economic crisis. And then the fourth pale horse, the fourth seal is the pale horse of death. And so then you wait a little while and then the day of wrath comes and then the multitudes are saved. Now, this is interesting. The multitudes is the 144,000 sealed people. Now, some people are wondering, what is this?
What is that,
okay,
all about, you may ask?
Because this 144,000 comes and then you have the multitude that's like without end that comes too. So first 144,000, some people have said like, oh, well, like for example, yeah, like Jehovah's Witnesses think that's them, like the first Jehovah's Witnesses,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Like there's like, and so like some people will say this, they're like, people that have been marked by God to represent God and stuff like that. But the Bible even says in Revelation 7, just read it, it counts them from Israel. There's 12,000 from each tribe of Israel. It says 12,000 from the tribe of Dan, like 12,000 from the tribe of Judah, and like 12,000 from the tribe of Benjamin. Like it just goes on like that, right? And so that equals 144,000. And so who are the tribes of Israel? What covenant is that?
The old covenant.
That's the old covenant,
yeah,
right? And so then they were followed by what? A great numberless multitude.
Of new covenant of all who come to know Jesus.
Boom!
After his relationship.
Us! The
it's
Gentiles.
Us, baby, let's go. Gentile nation, rise up.
That's right. So the 144,000 is the Jews in the old covenant. The multitude, the great multitude is us. It's the new covenant. It's the church.
Yeah. The countless folks who come after who choose to accept Jesus,
yes,
as their savior after his death and
right,
resurrection.
Then finally, the seventh seal breaks and there's 30 minutes of silence in heaven. And then you have all hell breaks loose when you have the judgments. And so with the trumpets that are next. And so that actually, like when I was an undergrad, it made me question, be like, 30 minutes of silence in heaven, that's crazy. And then I was like,
yeah,
what does that mean? And this is on the seventh seal. And then I was like, wait a minute, does that reflect the days of creation? Because on the seventh day, God rested.
That's interesting.
And so I looked at it and I saw that it does not.
Mm.
However, the seven trumpets totally do. And I actually published a paper on this.
Oh, there you go.
And it's called In the End, God Uncreated the World. And so the seven trumpets, my argument is a systematic undoing of the days of creation. Everything is falling back and mixing together. Pretty interesting.
I wonder if the 7 days, like the trumpets, also feels like very reminiscent of like Jericho.
Yeah, there, all that stuff is going in there. And there's also like even a reference to Moses and the plagues that are happening.
Yeah, because it's all what? Interbiblical.
It is. So I think if we split this up, let's end it here. And then we'll pick it up as a part two, because the next part is wild too. Like, so, so the, like, oh, this is going to end the first half of the book of Revelation. Okay. So it's a natural good place to end. That's where we'll pick up next. We're going to talk about the second half of the book of Revelation, and which really talks about the end of everything, the New Jerusalem and the whole nine yards. And then hopefully that brings you hope and not anxieties. It might give you more questions, but at least now you have a guided way to think through these passages,
yeah,
which I think will be helpful. You think that's a good ending spot?
I like it. We'll pick it back up when it gets chaotic.
We'll pick it back up when it gets chaotic. That's it for this episode, but we are going to pick up right back as part two next week.
Indeed. And until then, this episode, as always, is sponsored by the School of Theology and Ministry at Life Pacific University.
We'll see you next time.
See ya!